third man, girl. But it's a fact that I'm the seventh son. I'm the seventh son. And right now you could care less about me, but soon enough you will care by the time I'm done. Let's have a ball and a biscuit, sugar, and take our sweet little time about it. Ball, girl, and take our sweet little time about it. Tell everybody in the place to just get out, and we'll get clean together, and I'll find me a soapbox where I can shout it.
Of the weekend, time for another edition Sports City with Jay Smith here on radio.dominican.edu. Very exciting week in sports. You know, I say that every week, and every week it's true, and that's the best thing about sports. And I told my friend this the other day. With other radio shows and with other types of media, a lot of times you kind of have to come up with your own topics, and you have to come up with your own spin on everything. And while you have to do that in sports, the topics just come to you. And that's the best thing, because every single week, while I may plan a radio show, I still plan on what happened. It's so great that everything just basically comes to me. And I really just have to compile everything and put my own little twist on it. Something new happens every single week in sports. And that's what I love about it, among the thousands and millions of things. Anyways, now that we're very far off topic, a little housekeeping, actually. There's a Facebook. It is Sports City with Jay Smith. Go on Facebook. Go ahead and like that. Got a pretty cool logo, if I do say so myself. All credits for that go to Avery Jaffe, in fact. Very good at what he does. There's a phone number. Always welcome calls about anything sports, especially that Bay Area NorCal sports. The phone number is 415-482-3587. Again, 415-482-3587. I do welcome calls. I love callers. I love talking sports with other people. You know, sometimes gets a little lonely in the studio by myself, but I always welcome a new face to talk sports with. Plus, there's a blog. Yeah, Sports City blog. There will be new posts coming very soon. Go on sportscityu.blogspot.com. And that will be, it's basically an extension of Sports City with Jay Smith, except most likely more detailed. You know, I only have an hour here to talk sports with all my listeners. There, I have as much time, as much space as I need. I can go into details. I can throw out all kinds of ridiculous stats. It's a good place. It's a good place to go. You're gonna wanna tune in for a few of the new blogs. That's about it for housekeeping. After this break, we are gonna talk sports, obviously. And just a little heads up for anybody, any Giants fan that doesn't know, this is probably what I'm gonna be talking about for about, 20, 30, 60 minutes today. Matt Cain. He got signed. And all the details, what it means, everything will be up right after this break. You are listening to Sports City with Jay Smith every Tuesday at 5 to 6 on radio.dominican.edu.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Sports City. And I just like to wish everybody again happy day after Matt Cain Day. It really is. It's just a good day. And now on to talk about the seriousness of this Matt Cain contract. Give you all the details, everything you need. Number one, the money and the years. It will be for the next 5 years, $112.5 million, and with an option, with a player option of the sixth year, and then that will be $127 million. Now, that 6 year is a player option, which, I mean, if he's getting paid that kind of money, he's probably going to pick it up. So it's basically a 6 year deal. It wipes away the first 5 years of his free agency, and it wipes away this year, which was his last arbitration year, which is a whole mix-up in baseball that really, in my opinion, it seems a little messy. I know they do it differently because the way you bring up baseball players is a lot different than basketball or football or anything, but it's still the arbitration thing. It seems to get messy for me. Anyways, back to Matt Cain, because that's why we're here, because Matt Cain. Over the past 4-5 years, he has had wins above replacement, which is basically an all-encompassing stat for baseball, and that's pitchers and hitters. About a two wins above replacement is a starter, you know, an okay starter. 5 wins is an all-star. And then 8 wins above replacement, that's when you get to, you know, Albert Pujols status. That's, you know, reserved for basically the best of the best of the best. Matt Cain has been about a 3.5 to 4 WAR, W-A-R, wins above replacement, about a 3.5 to 4 WAR player, except last year, which was actually, he increased. He was at a 5.2 last year. And it really doesn't matter with last year. I feel like he'll probably regress to about a 4, maybe 4.5 this year because he gave up a ridiculously low amount of home runs last year. His home run rate was actually off the charts. He, over his career, has given up about 0.65 homers for every 9 innings that he pitches, maybe 0.7 homers for every 9 innings that he pitches. Last year, he gave up 0.37 for homers for every 9 innings. That's absolutely unheard of, especially for a player like Matt Cain. Now, Matt Cain is what people like to call a fly ball pitcher. Moneyball, the book, the movie, it said those ground out pitchers are better because you give up less of a chance to get a homer. You know, if in a ground out, you're going to get a double, not really even a triple, just a double at the most. With the fly ball, while it may be more effective in some circumstances, you also give up more homers, and that's a greater chance. The fly ball pitcher has a greater risk reward. Except with Matt Cain, he pitches in AT&T Park. And now he's going to be pitching in AT&T Park for the next 6 years. AT&T Park goes out to 421 feet out in right center, which is unbelievable, especially for a right-hander. A right-hander is more susceptible to left-handed hitting. Lefties like to hit to that right field, right center area. Those balls will not be homers. Those balls will be caught. It will be fly balls, you know, very, very long fly balls, but they're still fly balls. And it leads me to show you guys that the batting average for I'm trying to think of a way to say this. The stats acronym is BABIP, and it's basically the batting average of balls in play. That's what it is. It's the batting average for balls in play, and that's every time that a ball gets hit into play, what are the chances that the person is going to get a hit on that? Usually about average is, for a pitcher, is around 270, 280, something around there, but not Matt Cain. No, Matt Cain has been hovering around 250, 260. Except that could be, you know, that could be just chance. Just have a few good years. Except it keeps happening every single year. So Matt Cain is basically his own giant exception. He plays by his own rules because he is Matt Cain, and Matt Cain can do no wrong. And he is his own exception in that I don't think will ever go down in BABIP. He will stay at that same level, and he's shown he can stay at the same level. And that goes back to the WAR levels, the wins above replacement. Now, WAR takes into account the luck factors, those types of things like ERA, wins, batted balls that are batted into play. Those are very luck, defense-based things that a pitcher cannot really account for. Except Matt Cain seems to be accounting for them, and it doesn't show in his wins above replacement. Instead, his wins above replacement is actually lower than what he's actually worth. So instead of a 3.5-4 player, he's been about a 5 player. And again, 5 is all-star. And Matt Cain is the definition of an all-star. He's going to be an all-star. I don't think he'll ever win a Cy Young. I just don't think he has it in him to go 2.6 ERA with over 200 strikeouts and just absolutely go nuts on the rest of National League. I don't think he has it in him. I also don't think he has it in him to have an ERA higher than anything like 3.6. I almost don't see him regressing at all. Mostly because he's been the same exact player for the last 5 years, and it hasn't changed. And even though the defense around him has changed, the offensive support has changed a little bit. It's always been bad, but it's changed a little bit. Matt Cain hasn't changed. He's still put up the same great numbers, and that's why I think the contract is a plus. And that's why Brian Sabian, had to go out and get Matt Cain. He absolutely had to do this. He was basically basing his entire team on pitching. At the beginning of the offseason, Brian Sabian said, we can't afford Carlos Beltran. We can't afford Jose Reyes or even Jimmy Rollins or even Marco Scutaro. Any middle infield help that we could have used or any outfield help that we could have used because we have to spend all of our money on pitching. And the thing was, all the money we spent on pitching was two left-handed relievers at the beginning of the year. Now, that's not the pitching that Giants fans want to see spent money on. Luckily, he finally paid Matt Cain what Matt Cain deserves to do, or what Matt Cain deserves to get paid, and I think that he will be worth every single penny. Especially since I want to take everybody back to one of the greatest times in my life, one of the greatest times in any Giants fan's life. October of 2010, we saw Tim Lincecum throw ridiculous performances. That game one of the Braves series was one of the best pitching performances I will ever see. And then Lincecum went on to give up 3 runs one game. He gave up 2 runs another game. Matt Cain? Not one. Not a single run was given up by him. Or sorry, a single earned run. There was an error and a fielder's choice and all that stuff. He gave up 1 run while he was on the mound. But it was unearned, you know, fielders, all that stuff happens in baseball. Even Ian Kinsler's almost homer, that famous shot of Andres Torres almost looking up at that almost homer that hit the very, very corner top of the wall. Matt Cain didn't let him score. That was 0 outs, man on second. Matt Cain buckled down and said, nope, Rangers, you are not scoring once. And he did that the entire playoffs. And every pitcher, every hitter seems to be given, oh, they're clutch. Oh, they're not clutch. David Ortiz, he's so clutch. A-Rod, no, he's not clutch at all. Cliff Lee, in the last year's playoffs, was supposed to be one of maybe the best clutch pitcher of all time. Something like a 1.2 ERA in the playoffs, 7-1, just ridiculous stats. Well, Matt Cain, from what it seems like, he is 20 and two-thirds innings into his playoff career, and he still hasn't given up a run. And that's pretty clutch, if you ask anyone, really. Now, everybody was thinking after that 2010 run, oh, look at all those pitchers. Their innings went up. They're not used to this. Timmy had career high. Cain had career high. Sanchez, Bumgarner. Bumgarner was a rookie. They all had career highs. And we saw Lincecum regress just a little bit. You know, he still had elite numbers, but he regressed a little bit in 2011. We saw Bumgarner have a not very good April. We saw Sanchez just get destroyed by the fatigue, and he had no chance of doing anything in 2011. Matt Cain, he went out and went and got better. He pitched a career high in innings and then went on to again in 2011 pitch 221 innings after pitching 223 the year before. Those are elite numbers. Innings, I think, are a big factor in pitching and are an important factor because it's the pitcher staying out there for such a long time, and it helps the reliever stay healthy. If he's out there, he's obviously doing a good job. And he goes on and pitches 220-plus innings 2 years in a row. I don't see that ever changing, especially with a guy who is 6'3", 230, perfect delivery, literally nothing you could ask more of from a pitcher, especially from a build standpoint. You just can't ask more of Matt Cain. And, you know, to me, Matt Cain is basically, he's just America. His name is Matthew Thomas Cain. Cain, a biblical name. Matthew Thomas, just American as it gets. I can't express my love for Matt Cain enough. And I'm so, so glad that he's coming back. Now, let me come back down to earth for a second, because this is a lot of money that we're paying. And you know what? It might not work out. Every Giants fan knows the Zito contract. We all see that 7 years, $126 million, and how it's pretty close to the contract that we just gave Matt Cain. It's a year difference, basically. It really is just a year difference. And that's not that much, all things considering. But the thing is, the Giants had to go do this, because they're building around their pitching, and especially with a lot of people getting locked up with huge extensions. You saw Joey Votto yesterday get locked up for 10 more years. You have people like Fielder Pujols getting locked up for multi-year contracts this offseason. Everybody seems to be getting these long-term deals, and nobody's going to really be available. There's not going to be anybody to replace people like Cain and Lincecum. You almost have to lock them down. And the Giants had to do this because, again, the Giants are built on their pitching. And other than Cole Hamels, who I would hate to see as a Giant, I mean, he's a Philly. I would hate to see any Philly come anywhere close to a Giants uniform, especially a Philly that's been there a long time. The Giants have young hitting. They might not be ready, and there might be not be enough of it, but they have young hitting. They have, you know, Kung Fu Panda, Pablo Sandoval. They have Buster Posey. They have Brandon Belt, Gary Brown, Joe Panic. All of these guys are 25 or younger. And all of these guys are really, really good. We have our catching prospects even, Andrew Susak and Tommy Joseph. Those guys could be elite hitters in Major League Baseball. But none of those guys that I just said are pitchers. After we gave up Zach Wheeler in the Beltran trade, we have basically nothing when it comes to top three starter material. It really is nothing. And so you see that the Giants have this window, and I love that Sabian sees this. Maybe for a day. He might not see it for the rest of the time, but that's a whole nother show. But he sees that the Giants have this window. They have from about now to when Cain's contract is over. We still have Bumgarner all locked up on his rookie deals until 2016. We have Pablo Sandoval locked up long-term, Posey, Belt. All these guys are locked up long-term, and all these guys are very, very quality players. The time to win is absolutely right now. And if we're going to win a championship within the next 20 years, it has to be within the next four, basically. It absolutely has to be within the next few years, or the window is gonna completely combust. You know, you see, I always relate everything to the Kings, but the Kings had that window, that five-year window from about 99 to 04. They didn't do a good job of replenishing. They made bad contracts. And after 04, 05, we haven't been good since. And it's been a struggle to get back to relevancy. The Giants could very, very well do the same thing. You saw the way they toiled from 2005 to 2009, or like 04, 08, 09. All of those years post-Barry or at the end of Barry Bonds, they were bad. The Giants were just a straight bad baseball team. But right now, Giants are picked to win the NL West by a lot of people, and that doesn't happen very often. And the time really is now. That's such a cliche in sports and such a cliche in everyday life. But the time to win is absolutely right now. Man, I hope the Giants can pull it off. But you know what? All we have right now locked up long term and all we need is Matt Cain. Because Matt Cain. And that's all we need. Whew! Man, I love Matt Cain. So, now that we're done talking about Matt Cain, and you notice I've said Matt Cain every time. It's not Kane, it's not Matt or Matty. It's Matt Cain. He's one of those guys where you have to say both names every single time. It's just Matt Cain. Now that we're done talking about Matt Cain, we will get on to, as always, my favorite sport, basketball, but not a little bit not about the Kings. I know, a little different than usual, but it won't be about the Kings this time. It'll be about something else. Maybe about best players in the league. You know, end of the season is coming up soon. And in my opinion, the NBA MVP is absolutely the most important award in almost the most important individual award in sports, really. I think it doesn't really hold a candle to anything else, actually. So a little bit of MVP talk coming up. Right after this break, remember, this is Sports City with Jay Smith here on radio.dominican.edu. Love them. Love me some Smashing Pumpkins once in a while. And we're back with Sports City with Jay Smith here on radio.dominican.edu. And remember, you can call in, especially now getting into basketball talk. Remember, that phone number is 415-482-3587. And again, 415-482-3587. All right, back into Sports City. Now, at the end of the year, at the end of every NBA year, it's a sad time because, you know, love the NBA season. You don't want it to end. It should never end. However, we have to decide, and when I say we, I don't mean me personally. You know, I can have my own opinions. I can state my own opinions here, but to someone, to a big sports writer that has an MVP vote, my opinion doesn't matter. So when I say we, I mean the collective group of NBA fans and NBA followers that, you know, we can have a decision. And that's what's great about America. We have a decision. Anyways, off of politics, there's an MVP race going on. And it's basically a two-headed race. And before I get to those two, I would like to talk about a little bit about one of my favorite players in the NBA, Kevin Love. Kevin Love plays for the Minnesota Timberwolves. He was drafted in 07 with the third pick. Yes, he was drafted with the third pick, drafted by the Memphis Grizzlies, traded to the Minnesota Timberwolves, basically a switcheroo, OJ Mayo for Kevin Love. Obviously, the Timberwolves finally did something right. David Kahn finally got something right with Kevin Love for OJ Mayo. And Kevin Love has now turned into the best big man in the game. And it's really not even a comparison. He's absolutely the best power forward in the league right now. I came across a website called basketballvalue.com. And I came across it today, and it is already my favorite. Is already my favorite website. As Sports City listeners know, I love stats, and I think the advanced metrics, the advanced stats, can really tell most of the story. It's obviously not all of the story, but it can really tell most of the story of what is happening on the court, on the field, on the pitch, on anything. Advanced stats have come so far, and they're so useful, especially for someone like me. I don't get to watch every game. You know, I'm stuck in a dorm room. I don't get to watch every single basketball game that happens. I'm just not allowed to. Just the way of the world. It's a shame. However, the stats basically let me watch every single game and see what's happening. And see what's happening on a season-wide basis, on a career-wide basis. And Basketball Value is one of those websites that is really, really just an awesome website that I came across. First of all, I'd like to start with saying that Kevin Love just threw up a casual 31 points and 15 rebounds for the month of March, which, in my book, no other player other than maybe Moses Malone can, and that's it. Nobody except Moses Malone could have done that. Maybe once in a while you see Garnett, Duncan, even Weber sometimes throw up those ridiculous stats for a week or two. Kevin Love just did it for a month, and he's about to throw up these ridiculous stats for an entire year. He's averaging 27 points and 13 rebounds for the year. And none of those players that I just said, none of those power forwards, no Larry Bird, any forward you can think of didn't do that, basically except Moses Malone, who is, you know, top 10, top 15 of all time. Pretty good company to be with if you're Kevin Love. And if you watch him, I have watched him a few times, it seems like he can do anything. He can make 25-foot three-pointers. He has such a great low post game. He has the up and under. He has the jump hook. He has the step back fade away. He has that mid-range game. He has the high post game. And he's a wonderful passer, too. It's almost as if you're watching Dirk Nowitzki with Chris Webber mixed together. You have Nowitzki's range, you have his size, and then you see Webber's passing gene, you see Webber's rebounding gene. The dude can really just take over a basketball game, and like it's nothing, too. And all of this while he's white. It's baffling. It really is baffling. And onto those advanced stats, offensively, the Timberwolves they score about 97 points per 100 possessions. For every 100 possessions they get, on average, they will get 97 points out of those possessions. That's not very good. And that is without Kevin Love. That happens without Love. With Love in the game, 107 points per 100 possessions. That is a huge, 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 huge gap. That is almost unheard of in the NBA today. LeBron doesn't have that. Kevin Durant doesn't have that. All of those crazy offensive players like, you know, Kevin Martin. Those strictly offensive players, they don't have that. Only Kevin Love has 10 more points for his team for every 100 possessions. That means that not just is he the main big man, he is the main everything for that team. And that team without Kevin Love is probably a 10, 11, 12 win team. Especially with an injured Ricky Rubio, he's keeping this team almost in contention with a furious Western Conference this year. And that's just unbelievable. Now, on to the two heads in that MVP race. Kevin Durant and LeBron James. It's basically come down to those two. Kevin Durant's case is that he has basically the best team in the regular season right now. It's hard to contend that the Oklahoma City Thunder aren't the best team in the regular season. And he's by far, you know, they have Russell Westbrook, they have James Harden, but he is the best player on that team. He is one of the highest scorers in the league. He can almost score at will. He can do anything offensively. He can beat you off the dribble, take a 28-footer, have thunderous jams. He can really do anything offensively. Plus, defensively, I would say that he is average to above average. His length causes so much problems. And that's the thing about the Thunder. They have Serge Ibaka, they have Durant, they have Westbrook, all of those pure athletes with all of that length. It's so hard to do anything defensively with those types of players. And Kevin Durant is one of those types of players, one of those freak athletes with something like a 7'5" wingspan. It really isn't fair for anybody else. And with those three players, I think that you have such an amazing core for the next 10 years, and the Thunder are just going to be just an incredible, incredible team to watch this year and the next 10 years. But this is this year, and I think that this year, LeBron James doesn't compare to anyone else. In the regular, everybody bags on LeBron. Oh, he choked in the playoffs. Well, guess what? This isn't the playoffs. The MVP is for the most valuable player of the regular season. And right now, it's not even close, in my opinion, that LeBron James is the MVP. From that basketball value website that I just talked about, again, my new favorite website. Now, I talked about Kevin Love being 10 more points, or giving his team 10 more points per 100 possessions. Now, LeBron, and that's all offensively. Defensively, Kevin Love is about a 0 to +1 player for the Timberwolves. You know, he's a big body. He's a smart basketball player, and smart basketball players are decent defenders. LeBron is a smart basketball player, and he's one of those Kevin Durant-type elite athletes with crazy wingspan. And then you might as well just throw on 40 pounds to Kevin Durant, 40 pounds of muscle to Kevin Durant and call him LeBron James. And that's what he is defensively. LeBron James adds 3 more points defensively per 100 possessions for the Miami Heat, and then 7 more points offensively for every 100 possessions. Now that's doing it on both sides of the court, and it's incredible what he can do on both sides of the court. And he's earlier in the show, or not this show, but earlier in past weeks, I've talked about how LeBron is playing, you know, almost career low minutes just because the Heat are blowing everyone out. He only has to play 33, 34, 35 minutes a game. He's gotten up to about 38 minutes, 39 minutes per game this year, but he's still, even though there's a 66-game schedule, a shortened schedule because of the lockout, he's still doing it on both sides of the floor. A lot of times when you work that hard defensively, your shot starts to suffer, your driving starts to suffer, you don't pass as much. No, LeBron will just go out and average 27 points, 8 rebounds, and 7 assists for the year. In a year that they're consistently playing back-to-backs, and each team has 2 back-to-back-to-backs, and he's still putting up those types of numbers. It's mind-boggling what LeBron is doing this year as far as numbers, as far of what you can see with the naked eye. And that's the thing. I throw out all these numbers, and you can say, oh, but those are just numbers. A team can be good on paper, and they can be a 500 team in real life just because they don't mesh. It just doesn't work out with the player. He may be good on paper, he just doesn't look good if you watch him. LeBron basically looks better than most players in NBA history. Him running the fast break is a sight to see, and a sight that's on my bucket list to see in my lifetime. I really do want to see LeBron James in person in my lifetime, because what I've heard is basically he can take 5 steps and he's to the rim. And he has that type of explosiveness. And that does affect him offensively and defensively. And I want to go back to those advanced stats. His win shares, and right again, I brought up wins above replacement earlier when I was talking about Matt Cain. Win shares is basically the same thing for basketball. You can have win shares for every 48 minutes. You can have total win shares. It really is very similar, except LeBron leads in win shares per 48 minutes, and in John Hollinger of ESPN's basically all-encompassing, mostly offensive stat player efficiency rating, the PER, or like a PER, a player efficiency rating, which Hollinger thinks, is an all-encompassing stat. LeBron is far and away the best player, according to all those stats. It's not close. The second best player is Dwayne Wade on his team. And LeBron, again, this is the regular season, has absolutely been outshining supposedly Miami's marquee player coming into that big three season. It was supposed to be, you know, Wade is probably going to keep the reins, and LeBron might just be a second fiddle, might just be a Scottie Pippen. But LeBron has showed everybody that that's not what's happening. He can be that absolute force that we've expected him to be, and that he was in Cleveland. He was that force, and he's still that force. But again, this is all the regular season. And another reason why I think LeBron should be MVP is because I also think LeBron should be the defensive player of the year. It's basically, again, okay, let me restart this train of thought. Let's start with the Orlando Magic. The Orlando Magic have been very, very good. Not elite, but very, very good defensively for about the past 3-4 years. And that is almost solely due to Dwight Howard. And Dwight Howard has won the defensive player of the year the last couple years. And deservedly, too. This year, the Magic have regressed, at least defensively, and are about average to just above average defensively. And in my opinion, the defensive player of the year shouldn't be on an average to above average defensive team. The Heat, on the other hand, are one of the best defensive teams to play, and you can see it in the way they just attack the team, and they have traps everywhere. Their pick-and-roll defense is almost impenetrable, and you just see it everywhere. And it's basically, in my opinion, come down to LeBron James and Serge Ibaka. Serge Ibaka plays about 24 to 30 minutes tops a game, except he gets somewhere around 4.5 to 5 blocks a game, which is on an efficiency rating, and I do love efficiency. That's where most of my stats come from. That's unbelievable, almost unheard of, what Ibaka is doing. And again, Ibaka on that long, lanky, athletic Thunder team. And the Thunder are a very, very good, if not great, defensive team. And a lot of that has to do with Ibaka. However, I just think Ibaka's limited minutes and that he can really only shot block. If you look at his advanced numbers when it comes to low post defense, and this is a 6'11 guy, so you'd expect him to be a low post defender on an elite basis or on an elite status. He's average. He goes up against those elite low post scorers like Paul Gasol, Marc Gasol, Zach Randolph. He's average, if not almost below average, when it comes to, again, points per 100 possessions on that low post defense. LeBron James, however, his versatility is really where he wins the Defensive Player of the Year for me. Everybody saw it last year in the Eastern Conference Finals where he took on Derrick Rose, that season's MVP, and absolutely just shut him down. I remember in Game 5, that last game, Derrick Rose had one chance to tie it up, go for the win, and he couldn't get anything over LeBron. He couldn't do a single thing against LeBron, as LeBron just locked him down. And LeBron locked him down almost the whole series, too. Derrick Rose was not Derrick Rose in that series. That's a 6'3" point guard that 6'8" small forward LeBron is guarding and locking down. And you think, okay, it's a big guy on a small guy, and LeBron is quick. He just has the length. He can just block his shot, just get in front of him. But then you see LeBron James guard people like Blake Griffin, 6'10", 270, 280, giant men. He can guard the men inside on the low block. And because of his strength and his size, he can do just as well against them as he can the Derrick Roses of the league. And that is really where he wins the Defensive Player of the Year for me. And that's where he wins the MVP for me. And I will listen to any other responses for MVP, but I just keep coming down to LeBron's historic season that he's having. And I just don't see any way that he doesn't win the MVP. And again, this is regular season. Who knows if something will finally click in the playoffs, and if they get to the finals, if something will click in the finals, and he finally turns it on. But this is the regular season, and he is absolutely... I mean, 27, 8, and 7. 27 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists. That doesn't happen. That's better... That's Michael Jordan, if not better. It just doesn't happen in the game today, and it's happening in front of our eyes, and it's pretty incredible to see. After the break, we will finally get around to King's Corner. Man, it's been a while to get around to King's Corner. Just had so much to talk about. But yes, that will be after the break. And this is Sports City with Jay Smith on radio.dominican.edu.
Watch the
City, here with Jay Smith, radio.dominican.edu. A short King's Corner today, unfortunately. Got a little carried away with my Matt Cain love and my Matt Cain adoration. But, you know, it is Matt Cain. On to King's Corner. Isaiah Thomas, just content. You know, King's Corner, I think I said this last week, but King's Corner tends to turn into Isaiah Thomas love hour. Because Isaiah Thomas just won another Western Conference Rookie of the Month. And I don't see how there's any logical proposition that doesn't make Isaiah Thomas the second best rookie of the year this year. I just don't see it. And again, with that basketball value website on offense, and remember I said that Kevin Love is a 10 point per 100 possession upgrade, and that's a huge, huge difference. Isaiah Thomas is an 8 point per 100 possession upgrade, something from around like 98 points per 100 possessions to 108 points per 100 possessions. It's a huge difference. Isaiah Thomas makes all the difference in the world. And I really do think that DeMarcus really is affected by improved point guard play, because DeMarcus Cousins has just been having the year that everybody wanted him to have. It just, everybody. The little things about DeMarcus, too. He leads the league in charges, which is a credit to his quick feet. He's fourth in double-doubles behind Dwight Howard, Kevin Love, and Andrew Bynum, which are pretty good names to be in company with. Those are like top 10, top 15 names in the league. And the one thing that everybody can still hate on DeMarcus for, his foul trouble, I think will go... I am optimistic that will go away with age. I think that he will learn to keep his fouls down. And when he does that, he plays over 30 minutes a game. And when he plays over 30 minutes a game this year, he averages 22 points and 14 rebounds. 14 rebounds for a guy that's 21 years old and 22 points. That's Blake Griffin. That's what Blake Griffin did last year, basically, except basically better. I don't know. DeMarcus Cousins, I'm getting more and more and more optimistic with DeMarcus Cousins this year. Now, this has been another edition of Sports City. Unfortunately, it had to come to an end. But, of course, you can listen to me, Jay Smith, on the next show. Starts at 6 o'clock, goes to 8. The Sports Report with Brian Sanchez and Case Donahue. I will be the third host on that for a little bit, as I always am. And it really is. It's a great, great sports show. Everybody, Brian Sanchez, Case Donahue, they know their stuff. They know what they're talking about when it comes to sports, especially when it comes to Bay Area sports and NorCal sports, my expertise. And you're not going to want to miss that. And really, just all kinds. I just can't wait for another week of sports. Every week I say it that there's a big week in sports, and every week I'm right. And I just want that to keep continuing, and it's pretty fantastic that it keeps doing that. Thank you for listening, and this has been Sports City with Jay Smith on radio.dominican.edu.